Okay, this is a dysfunctional phone conference for the Monday evening right-wing consensus building group for the Supreme Court of Law for the USA. My name is Charles Stewart, and I am humbly apologetic for to everybody that has tried to tune in here and suffered my incompetence at running Zoom properly. I've had troubles with Zoom before, and I was going to call their technical support, but I procrastinated on that, and so now it bit me in the posterior here again. So I really got to do that after this conference so that we don't have these problems again. There's so much undercurrents here. Open with a word of prayer. We did a prayer over there on Zoom before we got ran up against a brick wall on the audio. I should open with a word of prayer. True God, Yahweh, Jehovah, Jehovah of armies, please, we humbly approach you in the name of your precious Son, Jesus Yeshua. Help us to sort through the insanity. Help us to keep calm. Help us to become more organized and solid in this different computer technology and communications technology. You have blessed us with many tools for organizing our communities to responsibly self-govern and take our country back from the corrupted people that are in positions of power and governmental authority here. But we, the people at the grassroots, need to get our acts together with our computer technology and our organizing capabilities so that we can actually mount something plausible that looks like an alternative to the evil empire system of government that oppresses us. Please guide and direct us here so that we can advance your kingdom in real-world meaningful manners and in the manner in which your precious Son, Jesus Yeshua, did 2,000 years ago. May we be blessed to carry on with his precious work, and in his precious name we humbly pray these things. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you. Thank you. If that wasn't a mistake, I should have been doing more dry runs. I should have...
We could try another platform, like Zoom. There's a couple others.
Yeah, somebody else's Zoom conference, like John Root. John Root was actually calling in here. I saw him just before I abandoned the Zoom caller. Maybe it was on my caller ID here. In fact, I should text him real quick with the new number.
Who's all on right now?
Well, let me see, attendees. It looks like it's just the four of us. Mike, you, and Chris, and me. Mike, Cindy, Chris,
Cindy.
And me.
I was hoping Paul would be on.
Yeah. See, that's part of it. We've lost Paul. We could reschedule an hour from now on free conference call. Well, I guess we don't really need to reschedule. I can just use my cell phone while I'm talking to you, and I can give Paul a call. I'll give Paul a call, and let him know. And I'll call John Root. Well. Here's Paul.
We started a call on Sunday night, taking over the veterans call. It used to be done by Hartford Van Dyke.
Yeah. Charles Stewart here.
Well, young man, my apologies.
You're apologizing to me?
Yes, sir.
I
slap missed that.
Well, we're okay. We had kind of a snafu. Our Zoom conference is all goofed up. Are you up to joining with us, or...
are you on right now?
Yeah, in fact, I got two phones in my hand.
Well,
one of them's on the conference. Huh?
Let me get in there then.
Well, you're going to have a problem because the email's obsolete because I screwed up I don't know how to run Zoom properly, apparently. So we're over on free conference call, which is simpler. That's our Saturday conference number and access code. If you don't have that handy, I could give it to you real quick.
Give it to me real quick.
Okay, 602 is the first part of the phone number.
All right, 602.
Yes, 580.
580.
9334.
9234.
No. The last four are 9334.
9334, okay.
And the access code is 715-9654-654.
Okay, 715-9654.
Yes.
Okay, calling in right now.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
Say, Charles, him the 003, I think, instead of the one that we're on, which is the, if I look here for a second, we're on the 9234 instead of the 9334.
Yeah. Wait, our regular Saturday, we're on that. I misdialed. Oh,
may
God, it's complex. Can you say that again, please, Chris?
I said you may have misspoke. I think you misspoke and said the 9003 or something to that effect instead of the 9654 on the call-in number. We're 9654 right now is what we're on.
Paul.
Paul's here.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Chris was worried I may have misspoke. I think I got the right phone number to Paul here and everything. Good to have you with us, Paul. I made a real big goof up. I'm kind of beating the bushes. I'm kind of multitasking. Michael is here, and I'm going to make calls to some of our key players and invite them over here to our free conference call forum. Michael, can I kind of put the my landline phone down here while I make a few calls on my cell phone, and maybe you guys can kind of talk about a few things while I make some other calls here. Is that good?
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you, Michael. I'm going to turn my speakerphone off and put the phone off to the side here. Michael, you're in charge until I jump back in. I yield here. Bye now.
Hey, Paul, how are you doing?
Up to my eyeballs and alligators. Did you get the email I sent you?
Yes, I did. I responded with the states, Nevada, New Mexico.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, well, when I saw that, I got busy and I modified the captions for those states and sent copies of those to you
so that
you're ready to publish on your website.
Fantastic. Let me take a look, make sure I got it.
You'll just have to figure out how to tell people, you know, those states are already prepared if they want to download them, sign them, and mail them. I did not include the mailing addresses for those divisions.
Okay, so you just named the district court without an address?
Yeah, the district. I inserted that, and I inserted the division. But I didn't have anything else. I didn't put down the mailing addresses for them.
No.
Okay.
We moved over to a different conference hosting company.
All right.
Bless his heart, he forgot to turn his phone volume off.
Did you hear me? Or anything? You couldn't hear anything, huh?
He forgot to mute his, yeah.
Yeah, bless his heart.
Yeah, I got those, Paul, thank you. 7:31 they came in.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I like how that spark ignited great conversation Saturday morning about the grand jury.
Yes, that is encouraging. And if we can get people around the country, I mean, for Pete's sakes, there was 75 million conservative votes plus whatever the...
The access codes?
Whatever the third, fourth parties brought in, it would be something to see a million petitions go into the federal judiciary.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully they don't charge us with paper terrorism, though.
They can charge me with anything they want to.
No one can charge you for paper terrorism for seeking redress of grievances and bringing a lawsuit. We all have a natural right to do so.
Well, you and I can agree on that. However, when you have unindicted felons employed as assistant United States attorneys...
I'm going to make another call.
Yes, they're liable to do any damn thing. You're right.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that was my point.
You got to know how to rebut their presumptions, assumptions, and tactical false narratives.
Yeah, well, I think I can do that pretty doggone good. The problem is I just can't get before the appropriate court of inquiry to do that. But, that's something, though, Michael, that you're going to have to caution everybody out there that they will probably run into the exact same thing. Their mailing to a grand jury will be intercepted and diverted.
Yeah. I think we also need to consider, thinking outside the box, we've got to consider accessing our county grand juries.
Absolutely.
And because the federal has become our enemy.
Absolutely.
And they're de facto. So we need to go down, the stepladder one notch, try the state and the county both.
Yep, absolutely. But, the neat thing about this past presidential election cycle is it touched everybody in the country, everybody. So
that's right.
Even local grand juries have jurisdiction to hear these cases.
I absolutely believe that to be true also. I couldn't agree more. Yep. We have no choice.
Yep.
Well, I heard today Arizona is ready to audit. They have hired the company, and they're getting things underway.
Well, now that's a bit encouraging, but the last word I had, I think it was early this morning, was that the Maricopa County Elections Board was not going to allow them to use their facilities to do that accounting in.
Yeah, I heard that too, but something has changed in that regard. My last report that came in about 20 minutes ago by a guy that's on the ground there in Maricopa County, he said everything's ready to go. So I don't know. They can try to obfuscate once again, but I think they're exposing themselves for, you know, hiding something. And
well, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's a criminal statute in Arizona that covers what that bunch has done, why they're not in jail.
Yeah.
Why they are not living in tents dressed in pink jumpsuits is beyond me.
Right.
Title 18, USC, Section 1346, failure to provide honest services fraud.
Yeah. Yeah. Honest service. So much for that law. You know, I'm going to have to go back and find the legislation that the public law that Congress did on that, and find the debates and read all of that and try to figure out just exactly what Congress had in mind when they were talking about honest service.
Chris, what was that again? Could you cite that again?
18 United States Code 1346, the intangible duty and right to provide honest services, the obligation. That means to be honest and upright. That corresponds to professional rules of conduct. Number one, to act in good faith without deceit.
Thank you.
One other thing you can do, too, is type in a search term in Google Scholar, searching the federal database, type in that 18 U.S.C. 1346 and see what the Supreme Court's had to say about it.
I'm trying to recall whether it was a Yale Law Review or maybe a Harvard or maybe the CRS research paper on honest services fraud that I pored over pretty intently because I'm involved in so much. I mean, the abject criminality of the courts, the bar, these are war courts. Most people don't know that, but justiciales, spelled two different ways, F-E-C-I-A-L-E-S, and F-E-T-I-A-L-E-S, you have to look them up both up separately, but you'll find when you do that nearly word for word, it says it's a secret, silent war to absolute destruction of anyone they can ensnare into their court schemes. Courts were used to replace armed combat on the field of battle by a war of wits and words in their war courts.
Yep, that's exactly what we're engaged in.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, I hope you get to feeling better, and maybe we'll just figure out sometime in the future, huh?
All right, that sounds good.
All right, bye now.
Well, looks like there's been 1,060 cases up to this year. That's in the federal judiciary, not in the Supreme Court.
I was doing some pretty due diligent research this morning, and I found some very intriguing things. U.S. versus Melo has an extreme amount on how to hold administrative agencies to accountability for failing to comply with their Public Duty Act responsibilities to provide honest services and to act within the law rather than becoming outlaws like they're predisposed to do because of their self-interest, because they're all private-for-private profits corporations. The other aspects that I was doing this morning that got me on a study,
I've got a new phone number, and
call it a due diligence investigation, had to do with I got this whole bunch of cases from searching out abuse of power, oppression of justice under color law. I found Stromberg versus California. A really good one was admonishments in Dejonge, J-O-N-G-E, capital D-E, capital J-O-N-G-E, versus Oregon at 299 U.S. 3. And it has something to do with inciting violence, which is exactly what I have. These people have tried to murder me twice by attempting to provoke me to incite violence so they could have a pretext to murder me. And placing you on the terrorist watch list whenever all you've done for a crime is studying law, claiming you're trying to take over the government, is tantamount, in my studied opinion, to yelling fire in a theater, because it radically enhances the ability of police officers to misperceive you as a danger and a threat to their survival and offers you up to be murdered on site under the pretext that you're going to do them direct harm, damage, and that you might be potentially wanting to kill police officers or judges, and that you're hypothetically, supposedly suicidal. It just exacerbates the likelihood that you're murdered by police under the false illusion that you've done something wrong, when we all have a duty to both know and be articulate and able to exercise the law in our own defense pursuant to Adderley versus Florida and removing ourselves from unbenighted ignorance.
Hey, Chris, what was it, if I may, what was it that you were saying you found out some ways to hold administrative agencies accountable? What did you find there?
It's either U.S. versus Melo or Melo versus U.S. I think it's Melo versus U.S. It's Harriet and I can't think of his name right now, Melo. And basically, it's a template for holding the Administrative Procedures Act bad actors to accountability. Ralph Winterout is also doing a lot of investigatory. He has Westlaw at hand. He pays for, and he is looking very seriously at holding judges and agencies accountable. In fact, the states all are committing fraud and theft by deception by stealing the titles to your car under the forcing the dealerships to offer you this unconscionable contract where you give all right title and interest to a power of attorney that you don't even have a clue with. And they assign all the interest over to the state, and you merely have possessory interest of the automobile that you think you own, and that's why they can force you to have insurance and tags on it, is because you have unwittingly been volunteering to give over right title and interest when you buy a new car, even if you pay cash for it, because they keep the manufacturer's certificate of origin, not you.
Yeah, that's an interesting case. That is very interesting. I've heard this discussed before.
That sounds like a very interesting line of thought, Chris. I'm back, and I think we've got a few others here. Thank you guys, Michael, especially for carrying on the conversation. I think David Scheid's with us. David, are you with us?
I am. Thank you. This is the first time on a Monday I've been here, so thank you very much.
All right. I made a few other calls, too. And I guess we ought to go with God's Holy Spirit has directed a real nice discussion as I came back in between Chris Cave of Nevada and I believe Michael of Florida. To just kind of build on that, an enchanting conversation, and I can't help but immediately wonder about the bold proposition that Chris made there. Chris, in pursuit of the thought that administrative process is being developed that can actually hold corrupted public servants and administrative officers to accountability. And the respected researcher of Ralph Winterode Wilson, I believe is his last name, no Wilson, a very respected leader, but I'm perplexed. Has anybody, including Mr. Winterode or your personal resource on this area, developed your accountability mechanism? Does that include enforcement, the key issue that Michael and others have all been so concerned about? Do we have the right to start enforcing our own administrative or other judgments, or are we still reluctant, are we still reliant upon normal police power type of corrupted public servants for any type of enforcement? Chris?
Well, from near as I can say, let's say hypothetically, should be able to go to the courts to seek redress. However, I have to qualify that because in my stated opinion, we are in the time of what's termed judicial tyranny of the judiciary that Thomas Jefferson warned us so cautiously about, that when all powers concentrate in the so-called federal government or FAED, dual government, because it's a two-hat system at least, if not more, where they have, that's Downs versus Bidwell, that's Judge Learned Hand, 1901, says we have in our system two systems of government. We have the de jure American form of government, the republic that we thought we were formed of, and then because of the 1871 D.C. Incorporations Act and other skullduggery and treachery by the American so-called Communist Bar Association. They must not have liked what I was saying, I guess.
Sorry for the goofiness here, people. Chris, I interrupted you in the middle of a train of thought. Sorry. Please continue. You were saying?
Well, when we really do our own due diligence and study where the so-called American Bar Association comes from, back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, in Chicago, Illinois, was where the first Bar Association, American Bar Association, was supposedly brought to life. This is a private association, and they have now ascended to and seized complete control of the whole judicial or Judas Sha'el system. Whenever we study ancient Hebrew and some other language texts, we learn that Ha-Shatan is what they call the devil or Beelzebub or the demon or whatever else you want. Well, it's the evil or devil. I can't tell you. But because of this, the Bar Association is effectively a racketeering extortion shakedown operation here in America. And they like to pretend, and every time you have a question, oh, you got to talk to an attorney. We're not qualified to give you legal advice. Well, they aren't either. In fact, 1825 Webster says that legal is the removal of God from the law. And they replaced it with 50 shades of gray that they term legal, that everything is legal, nothing is illegal unless someone makes the claim and it was the allegation. And if you don't rebut the presumption, it stands as truth unrebutted. That's U.S. versus Twill and Henry Horton R. Pruden.
Right, right. Yeah. Can I jump in here a little bit, Chris? You're swamping us in valuable data. And our first issue was whether or not we had enforcement for the profound insights that you claim are being developed through administrative process, right?
Well, that is the conundrum that we unfortunately are presented with in this time of very dangerous time for America, because the Republic is under assault. We are effectually occupied at this point. We've had a violent insurrection, a revolutionary takeover, a siege of the White House.
If I might, please. That's why we're trying to figure out if your bold proclamations about how we're making great breakthroughs in administrative process here is actually got some enforcement that we can tap into, or if this is just more misguided enthusiasm about something. It seemed like what I gleaned from what you answered earlier there, that this profound advancements in administrative process is now saying, well, after you secure all this administrative process, then you can take it to a court and ask them to enforce it. Wasn't that your bottom line there?
Well, depending upon which court, there are pockets of justice. I think Allison J. Nathan up in the New York district is pretty sound. There's some down in the south areas of Alabama and different countries. Yeah, they're just pockets where you can actually get some justice. I think Texas has got some where Judicial Watch has taken some of their cases to get the FOIA request.
What are you talking about? Are you talking about somebody that has enforcement authority? They can issue orders to sheriffs to go out and remove some corrupted public servant from office or something like that?
Well, we're supposed to have, and by law we should have, but in this legal la-la land, there is nothing guaranteed, I assure you.
Well, I know that, but from your enthusiasm talking about administrative process earlier, I thought you were on to some kind of breakthrough there. Perhaps I was presuming too much. Is that correct?
Well, it's all dependent on whether or not you have objectively honest judge or administrator sitting on the court. Most of them are all administrators with black robes on, posing as judges, and they aren't judges. They're actually administrative hearing officers, if you will.
Right. We've known that for the last 50 years. I think we're at a point where it's conclusive that relying on corrupted administrative judges in the courts of the civil municipal governments at all levels is a losing proposition. We need something to break through at the grassroots level to get the grassroots people really empowered. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like I was presuming too much from your earlier words about the administrative process providing some type of significant advancement there. Am I wrong?
Well, I can only say it's a template or a guide where you pretextually should be able to hold them accountable. However, in the times of judicial tyranny and with these activist judges, especially like the Ninth Circuit, where I regrettably am, it makes it a very dangerous precept to believe that you can rely on the honesty, integrity, when these are just nothing but a bunch of actors' guilds that put on black robes and try and convince you that they have some authority and the ability to make decisions that are viable and predicated on law, when very little could be further from the truth, in my observation.
Sounds exactly what I was afraid was the ultimate bottom line there. Thank you for the clarity, Chris. We should probably try to get back to some semblance of our regular agenda here, unless there's objection from anybody. Anybody?
It does sound like Chris is pretty well familiar with all the theories that we have pursued over the years, and found that all those theories are good to know as background, but they aren't going to help us moving forward, other than to know that we can't rely on the court system anymore. I yield. This is David.
Thank you, David. Other comments or questions as we try to develop a little more equilibrium and get back to our normal agenda? Comments, questions, anybody? Hearing none. To try to follow our agenda. Basics, opening prayer, we're past that. Preliminary procedural matters. Welcome to our dedicated right-wing consensus building conference. Section 2. Are there any new cases to be placed before our court's docket? Does anybody have a case that they would like to place on our docket for future adjudication here? Hearing none. Does anyone have any new agenda items to be added to next week's agenda? Hearing none. Yes, anybody?
Paul here.
Oh, yes.
I am just wondering about, you're talking about enforcement. I'm wondering about the usefulness of arbitration. Now, that's not a term I'm familiar with in the common law. So if someone has some knowledge about that, I would certainly like to hear it next week.
Paul, I have a copy of the 1934, it's a two-volume copy of the Tort Claims Act. And in the preface of that document, it tells us, and I have read it, that in order to go to mediation, which is usually having an attorney sit and mediating over an attorney and somebody else, which the deck is stacked, presumably when you go in, you must know that. But it tells us that anytime you agree to go to mediation, both parties must agree to be able to have it mediated. And if we don't set the terms and define the terms and make sure it's a fair mediation as opposed to one conflicted and biased by the associations of the private associations of the bar, then I think you're putting yourself in dangerous consequences agreeing to be mediated where the deck could be stacked against you.
You are correct in that assumption, as long as the participants are still contracting parties under the prime contract. Now, if you have a situation where you have a community of American nationals, for example, who are no longer contracting parties under the Constitution, then they would be free to adopt as part of their common law the use of arbitration. And if it ever became necessary, then as long as they are within the continental United States, they could go into, and one of, let's just say there's a dispute, somebody gets a arbitration award in their behalf. And then if that arbitration award is not honored, then they could go into a court, an Article III court, and seek enforcement there of the arbitration award. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because at the end of 2019, there was a U.S. Supreme Court case came down where the Supreme Court told all federal judges that it didn't matter whether they liked a arbitration award terms or not. The only duty they had was to enforce the arbitration award. So there would be a way, I think, but this of course, now this is just a thought that popped into my mind while y'all were talking, and so it's going to take a little bit more research than what I have, and I yield.
The question and caveat I have is, having done some pretty deep diving investigation into putting complaints in federal judges, as I unfortuitously discovered that when you go to hold an Article III judge accountability, you are forced to go to the administrative Article III board of commissioners or hearing officers. And I point out that that is an oxymoronic concept that is totally adverse to one another, because administrative means management. And how can it be a administrative Article III? Because Article III implies common law by its original concepts of the de jure Article III judges appointed with life tenured appointments during terms of good behavior. That's my observation.
Okay. Well, see, this is some of the issues that would have to be researched and applied to the concept. And I yield. Charles, go to sleep.
Thank you. I had my mute on. I was jabbering at the phone. And...
I'll bless your heart.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hey,
if I might, on...
Charles, just so you know, I checked the Farmer's Almanac this morning. And it said that today the signs were going to be in the bowels, so.
Okay, so all of these problems, we can blame it on the astrology or something, huh?
Yes.
Okay, well, that makes me feel a little bit better.
I have a case citation that listeners on this call might find useful. I think I've shared it with Paul. But the case is Gary Klein versus the City of Beverly Hills, and the outtake of it is theft by judicial deception.
Whoa! Beverly Hills, I'm writing that down.
Well, it's a pretty good case. It's a Ninth Circuit decision. I think it's Circuit Court of Appeals out here. It might have gone to the Supremes, I don't remember. But it's a powerful case. And I have experienced theft by judicial deception, and I will share with others something I've done a lot of due diligence in, and that's studying the so-called USA, I'd prefer to call it correctly, Kill a Patriot Act, Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, incorporating which was put forth in 1978 by Nancy Pelosi, not surprisingly, the daughter of Satan. Maybe she's Shamarinus or Beelzebub's bride. I don't know for sure, but she's a very dangerous woman, a psychopath. However, the USA Patriot Act, if they have, and understand that these FBI and federal agencies have become so abject corrupt, they have the ability to award themselves, I think it's like up to $500,000 without having to get clearance from the Department of Justice, who supposedly oversees it. And so they have a dramatic and substantial financial vested interest in labeling someone as a terrorist and placing them, nominating them, they call it, to be placed on the terror watch list. Having been placed there myself, I found myself having to research this stuff, and I think, as best I'm able to determine, I've been removed from it because I did a mediation declassification review with the overseeing body that oversees all the agencies. Once you've been turned down for a FOIA or public records request by the FBI, you can then go above them to this Mediation Declassification Review Board in D.C., special address, and you got to put some special numbers on there to get it to the right office to get this hearing. But I actually had the director of the Administrative Hearing Board call me up and let me know I'd got the cart before the horse at putting a request for the Mediation Declassification Review prior to having the administrative agency, the FBI, turn me down and provide a written proof of it that I could submit with my complaint, which I later did. However, the insidious aspect of this so-called Foreign Surveillance Intelligence Act, 1940, and its later on FISC, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Courts, where they can operate in secret in camera and ex parte, or in camera and camera, if you prefer that pronunciation, ex parte. And if you are pending an indictment for terrorism, although Americans are supposed to be held to a higher degree of proof before they are, with these secret courts and stuff, you can't know what they're doing. And myself, I had a slam dunk case against J.P. Morgan Chase for multiple claims under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, Title 15, United States Code 1692, et sec, Telephone Call Protection Act, and some other violations of RESPA and Reg X and Reg Z and so on and so forth, predatory lending with a fake broker-dealer agent who notarized her own document in a borrowing of a home equity line of credit, a HELOC loan from them, thinking I was dealing with an actual agent of the bank when she was actually self-interested and posing as an agent of the bank with self-interest. And she abused her notarial functions egregiously. But because my case was so tight and so valuable, I'm guessing, they used the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act Court and the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act C, Section 1 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, Title 702 of the section on the Patriot Act. You go down on Section 1 of that at the very bottom to parenthetical C of Section 1, and you will find that the judge has the ability, if you're a pendant indictment for terrorism, to circumnavigate, to obstruct justice, and to deny you all substantial justice and all American due process of law, and to rule in secret in camera to moot or disgorge your case and keep it from going forward. This is what they did with me to steal my home worth about $1.2 million. And so some of these things that I've run across as pitfalls and this thing I've been drug into, and thankfully I had studied law with several astute law groups, including We Study Law, Fred and Nina Gutierrez here in Las Vegas, and this was what they colored as plotting to take over the government, because we were studying how to hold bad actors of government under Bivens versus Six Unknown Federal Narcotics Agents, Title 42, Section 1983 lawsuits for damages to hold them to accountability. And because I was an advocate and an activist for honest government and sharing this information on open internet truth media airwaves, They came at with me with a vengeance and have tried to murder me two different times with egregious abuses of mass deadly force, and I can only thank the Creator above that I'm still here on this call talking and doing my Ezekiel 33:6 duties to shout it from the top of the towers and the walls, the truth around the world to let people know what's going on. And for this, they have vindictively come at me with a vendetta and a vengeance that you could not imagine. The FBI and their agencies,
Chris,
the counterterrorism center. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. We're all enchanted by your very colorful history, I'm sure. I'm not being sarcastic. It's a profound story you're telling there. We're at a juncture where, rather than diving into details of the evils that confronts us, this conference, I do believe, is dedicated to providing solutions and remedy. And I dare suggest that the brick wall that you're up against there, it will only be possibly broken through, and we will start getting accountability for this conspiracy of corrupted public servants, if we organize our from the grassroots bottom up, as has been the general theme of this conference. The alternatives that the Roman Empire municipal model of government is provided, such as administrative process and arbitration, the root meaning of that word arbitration is arbitrary. Do y'all realize that? You're looking for remedy through a process that has at its root meaning arbitrary process rather than solid reputation for respecting people's God-given natural rights. You see, there's 100 different ways on the table to not do it, to do it wrong. They want you out there looking at all the ways to do it wrong, because at that point you become swamped with all the different options. See, there's one way to do it right. That's the biblical Torah law-based common law tradition that is enshrined in the Seventh Amendment to our U.S. Constitution. That builds off of the Sixth Amendment, where we've got the power to do our own enforcement under the counties and the precincts and the townships at the grassroots level. The problem is developing the clarity of focus for the group and developing the courage to realize that, okay, it's just us here. We're not going to have a nanny state come in and pat us on the head and say all the jackbooted Nazis have to stop. Somebody was talking earlier about getting a judge to help us with this. I think it was you, Chris. If we can find a good judge or a good administrator at some enclave in Alabama, or maybe Texas has some, they might be able to stand up and courageously confront the jackbooted Nazis for us. Well, maybe, but it seems like an awful long shot, and it seems like even if we do have a rare patriotic arbitrator or judge there that's standing up for us, he'll probably end up assassinating him, or something else will happen, and then where will we be? See, if we work on building our own responsibly self-governing communities that have our own judicial process in place, then that's a game changer for everybody. Everybody can take it and run, even if they assassinate me and you and a few others that are in leadership positions. Others can carry on with it, because we're not dependent upon that Roman Empire civil municipal way of doing things. We got our own grassroots process that anybody can jump up and run with. Once we start making it acceptable and bring a few cases to the fore and get some breakthroughs. And what you're talking about being assassinated and stuff like that, if I might just go on to one other subject here, I don't mean to dominate the microphone too much, but you invoke process to hold them to accountability, like what I believe you said, Chris, that unless you are in their in their face with a well-pleaded criminal complaint. They are going to bring corrupted process against you to try to shut you down. This is what happened with Leroy Schweitzer and the Montana Freeman. They were using commercial process, very advanced, nothing at all wrong with it, but they weren't doing common law. They weren't accusing the corrupted public servants of committing crimes. That's what they were doing with the Colorado Nine that I've been involved with. They were leaning up public servants. They weren't accusing them of committing crimes. They weren't bringing criminal complaints against them. See, you got to jump in to the criminal complaint forum. And this is a little bit, Paul has recently, I think we lost Paul. But Paul has recently been talking in terms of bringing presentments before a grand jury, and I think he has been wording it better by mentioning criminal, using words similar to a criminal complaint. But when you throw down the gauntlet by accusing people, corrupted public servants, of being involved in criminal racketeering conspiracies with real victims, real breach of the peace, common law crimes, you can be involved in racketeering without having a breach of the peace, common law crime. You got to have a breach of the peace, common law crime to really invoke true judicial process, general jurisdiction for the people. And once you have that, then that's a game changer. That puts them on a level playing field as a matter of law with you, and they can't play any more smoke and mirrors with you on that. And so that's where my head's at, Chris. And I hope that makes sense to you and the others here. I kind of monopolized the conversation there. I should yield for comments or questions about the rant I just went through. Anybody? I yield.
Well, Charles, it's Chris here. I was trying to offer some remedies, and I think that providing the information fundamentally of how to remove yourself from a terrorist watch list is probably pretty good for, because I'm really reasonably expecting that probably quite a few people on this call, if you have the audacity to study law and try to become adept at holding corrupt public officials to accountability, it's not unlikely expected they're going to put you on the terrorist watch list to increase the likelihood of you being eradicated from the planet.
Yeah, definitely. That sounds like good research. What is your magic solution for that problem there, Chris? Did I miss something?
Well, the mediation declassification review procedure, I think it was Ibrahim versus Holder was the case that I gleaned a lot of the knowledge and the particular special stuff to put me on the trail to search it out. Whenever they bring these so-called Middle Easterners and foreigners to courts, some of the cases against Brennan of the CIA or the NSA, they're very helpful to read those. There aren't a lot of them out there, but that can at least provide you a trail to search and narrow your focus of how to find the relief that you're seeking for. And those mediation declassification review board in D.C. is not known by, I bet you there's not a handful of attorneys around the planet that know how to remove somebody from a terrorist watch list, from the Counterterrorism Center and the Terror Screening Center's classification and nomination of putting you on there as a potential hypothetical domestic terrorist.
Okay, are you saying that's through some type of mediation process?
It is. The declassification review procedure is an administrative hearing board of these high-level 30-year or more bureaucrats that are a part of the secret senior executive services that are listed on the DOJ's website under their so-called ethics under Section 1.1 hyphen, maybe it's a colon instead, 4.000. Under that one, there's a document there under their so-called morals and ethics that when you read that, it's about 31 pages. Starting about page 20, it tells you specifically that the senior executive services are 30-year or more DOJ actors. These are the same 2,500 that sent in a complaint about Trump, alleging that they were Department of Justice retired employees that were not fair, neutral, and biased, but they actually had an agenda of getting rid of Trump like they've had ever since before he got elected.
Okay. Looks like Paul made it back in here. Hi, Paul.
I'm not high yet, but give me a minute.
Jeez, Paul. That sounds like you might be indulging in some of that the therapeutic herbal technology there.
I like my left-handed cigarette.
My golly. I thought you was too old for that kind of radical hippie-type stuff.
I'm an old hippie, and I don't know what to do.
Oh, the secret's out of the box now, my God, Paul. All right, well, you just made my day. I didn't realize that, yeah, you and I got a little bit more in common the more I get to know you. Chris is sharing some real profound insight with us there. I don't know if you was picking up on it, Paul. Did you hear much of what Chris was saying?
I didn't hear near enough, just enough to whet my appetite, but there's no point in going back over it. At least I know.
Paul knows how to get hold of me.
Yeah. Now I got his number.
Ah, there we go. Well, yeah, the community building. So we can all follow up in private phone calls after the conference here. And there was a lot there, Chris. To jump into, and I've had numerous thoughts just since you were talking about it for trying to build and try to put something productive about it out of it. But we do have an agenda here that would be nice to kind of try to follow a little bit. And I think that agenda. Well, if I pull my conference thing down, new agenda items to add to next week's agenda. I think Paul jumped in there to talk about something to add to next week's agenda, and we got off on a tangent there. Paul, what were you trying to say when I was going through the agenda items here? And go ahead.
You reached the point where you asked about new items, and I was just wondering if anyone out there had sufficient knowledge about the arbitration process and whether or not that existed in common law. I don't know, and I'm talking about the common law as it existed back at, you know, when our Constitution was enacted.
Yeah,
and that's something. That's an area of law that I know nothing about, other than the fact that arbitration could turn out to be a means of enforcing decisions reached by the court in this particular venue.
Okay, well, I think that's a long way around to the same conclusion. I think I kind of built off of that with Chris a little bit earlier, and he was talking about administrative process, and when you complete administrative process or arbitration process or anything like that, then the magic solution is then, well, okay, you got a judgment there and you need enforcement, then you can go to one of the wonderful courts that they're provided and you can ask them to do the enforcement for you. Okay?
Yeah, there's a lot of issues that would need to be ironed out and understood.
Well, if I might try to reemphasize my point, if that's the result of all of the administrative and arbitration and all the other smoke and mirrors gobbledygook that is available through the Roman Empire model of government, then why don't we just spend our time and energy instead on a jury trial, and then take it to one of those corrupted judges, same as we would be doing with arbitration or administrative process. We would take, that's the same square where we end up after all that other goofy stuff, only this time we would have a lawful judgment from a jury with Seventh Amendment authority, which that administrative stuff and the arbitration process don't give us. We got a more powerful thing if we do our jury trial under the Seventh Amendment. I hope you all can comprehend that. Are you? Does that make sense? I hope it does. And one other thing, I don't mean to beat up on you too much, Paul, but that word arbitration, I mentioned it before, I think you were offline. The root meaning of the word arbitration is arbitrary. That's not law. That's not law. You just select somebody that's going to be your arbitrator, and he's going to do whatever he feels like. That's called discretion. That's the nice word. The more proper term for it is arbitrary. At least they're being honest when they're talking about arbitration. It's arbitrary. If we're going to save our country, we got to have something that's not arbitrary in our administration of justice. We got to have something that's solid and consistent and respects people's rights all the time instead of just an arbitrary roll of the dice. Right. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. That's what arbitration's all about. I yield. Comments?
I might point out, Charles, that word term, discretion, that you pointed out, when it's unfettered and unlimited discretion, it becomes very dangerous to liberty and freedom. When judges have unfettered discretion, it invites them to have wide open pockets to be improperly influenced in their so-called arbitrary, capricious decisions that may not have your interest at heart or in their wallet.
Definitely, and I would not use the word may there. I would rather use the word shall or something like that. That's more directly linked. They are franchisees of the Babylonian whore economic system, and they will consistently rule against a grassroots patriot that's just trying to get justice when. There's economics on the table, and one of his fellow parasites is your opponent. We need to be talking about fundamental bedrock level foundational changes here. That whole Roman Empire model of government in all of its different forms, administrative, arbitration, commercial, whatever you want to talk, we got to get back to the laws of nature and nature's God. The biblical Torah law and the common law, both of which are related, as Blackstone recognizes, that's where we need to go. That's where our remedies are. If those of us that consider ourselves Christians, that should be the no-brainer, the prioritized issue for us to go for, because this is the model that Christ set in motion. When the Roman Empire destroyed Jerusalem in AD 70 and tore down the temple, the people that fled out of Jerusalem, as Christ said, leave, flee out of Jerusalem, and they fled to the north, past the Caucasian Mountains, the Caucasus Mountains. That's where our Caucasian history comes from. Those barbarians in northern Germany that weren't civilized, they were uncivilized barbarians in Germany and England and all those northern tribes, Norway, the Nordics, they were all barbarians and uncivilized. They had the tradition of the biblical Torah law, and that is what evolved into common law, as William Blackstone recognizes. Okay? We're the only culture that carries on with that Exodus 18 model of social organizing and building our self-governing communities. We're the only culture that does that. It's our Anglo-American common law tradition, Protestant. Roman Catholics don't do it. We've got a lot going for us if we can just do proper inventory. And a lot of it's about intelligence. I got a train whistle in the background. Let me pause for a moment here while I close the door. Comments, questions, anybody? I'm on mute. I'm back off of mute. I closed the door. You guys are all having dinner while I'm jabbering away, aren't you?
No, not me.
Okay. I dearly love these intellectual swordplay type of discussions where we're all looking for the more powerful solution so that we can get justice in our courts for our common people and break through the evil empire system of tyranny. And I dearly love opportunities to work with other men that are on the same pathway and wherein I've been spending lots of time studying a lot of this. I think you're all picking up on that. And I love it when I got opportunities to say, well, wait a second, brother, there's more efficient ways of achieving our goals here if we just go this way instead of that way. And you know, I'm open to being corrected. Anybody want to tell me I'm just blowing smoke and I don't know what I'm talking about? You know, I'm all ears. Let me pause for a couple seconds right there. Anybody want to tell me I'm wrong on anything? All this common law, Bible, Torah law stuff? Am I delusional? Anybody? That's the answer I was hoping for. Nobody telling me I'm full of smoke. And really, really, you don't have to be a Bible thumper to step back and look at the nature of the tyranny and despotism that is facing us here. Okay, we got serious, profound problems, and if you're one of those secular humanist atheist type people that is also not only aware of the despotism and the tyranny, but the complete lack of any functionality in the courts, then you've got a double leg up. You both recognize the evil that we're facing and that evil has infected the courts. Then you realize that there's only a small quadrant, like one-third, left of all the possible options for those of us that are motivated in that smaller jurisdictional area to actually fight against the evil that's dominating two-thirds of our population right there. Two-thirds of the population are too stupid to be able to get a handle on this. Those of us that are aware of the evil, most people aren't aware of the evil. That's a third of them right there. Well, maybe not most people. At least a significant minority are not aware of the evil. Another significant minority is aware of the evil, but they're either too incompetent or too cowardly to do anything about it. That's another third of our population. People that either don't know the solution, or else if they do know the solution, they're too afraid to confront. Okay? That's two-thirds of the population right there. Okay? And the solution is only going to come from the remainder third, which is people like us. We're not afraid of a fight, okay? And we're not stupid, and we're serious about looking for peaceable remedies, peacekeeping remedies for pursuing justice. Justice and peace work together. See, I frequently use terminology talking in terms of, quote, exhausting the pathway of peace, unquote. That's common law phraseology. This is why common law jurisdiction law enforcement is referred to as, quote, peace officers, unquote. This is why the precinct captain is referred to the general jurisdiction judicial power person exercising judicial power for the precinct, 10 townships. This judicial officer of general jurisdiction, as recognized in the Sixth Amendment. He's got criminal jurisdiction there, the right to try crimes, and the right to arrest people. He's called Justice of the Peace. See, that's a very powerful title. It's got both the word justice and the word peace right there. That requires due process of law. And see, it, this goes to novel things about running a general jurisdiction common law court. See, we would not issue arrest warrants before the trial. See, and this is why we are at such an advantage in comprehending this technology, which now that we're only doing conferences once every other 2 weeks, I've had more time to get it sorted out in my brain so that I can articulate these matters more clearly, both verbally and in my written texts. And it's nicely coming together. I appreciate y'all not getting all huffy and accusing me of being a goofball because I'm only doing conferences every other week now instead of weekly, because I'm developing a sharper edge on what I'm talking about. I'm able to explain it in clearer wording. And oh, I forget where I was going with all of that, but I'm kind of rambling. I should pause here. Comments, questions, anybody?
Are we in a general discussion on the agenda right now?
We kind of deteriorated into it. You can jump up and grab the microphone and talk about anything you want for at least a few minutes here, Paul.
Well, it just occurred to me early on in the conversation while you were calling, there was somebody talking with me and Michael and mentioned that he had been accosted and an attempt was made to provoke him into doing something inappropriate so that he could probably be charged with terroristic threats and acts or something of that nature.
Probably Chris.
Chris, was that you? Chris must be gone.
Well, it could have been. You know, I was rambling on there a bit because there's so much. I mean, the amount of deviosity and illegal bar tricks, nefariosity and deviousness that I have encountered, we are dealing and living in the empire of lies right now, and most of these government agents are unconscionable serial liars. I'm not sure that they would know the truth if it bit them on the posterior. Somebody is schooling these people to fabricate falsities as a manner of criminal racketeering enterprise, of false testifying, inventing false charges, false arrest, all for fiduciary interest and pecuniary acquisition of monies that aren't due and owed to them.
I understand. And it occurred to me that someone like you who can maintain a proper deportment in the face of that type of an adversity, if you happen to be recording any of it, you might want to check your state criminal statutes and see if you have any statutes on the question of nuisance. And usually a nuisance is, in Georgia anyway, can be prosecuted as a misdemeanor. And it would be a bit of a tickle to stand there and take the abuse and not respond like you know they want you to, and then turn around and walk down to the magistrate's office and take a warrant for their nuisance activities.
Well, it's not the nuisance statute, but Title 18, United States Code 1503 et sec, is improperly influencing, harassing, terrorizing, or improperly influencing a victim, witness, or informant.
Absolutely.
I have used that one to put them in abeyance and to get them to cease and desist from stalking me and hanging out outside my apartment complex because I am accusing and bringing charges against these people for attempted murder, attempting to incite armed violent reaction to enable murdering me, to silence me, First Amendment violations, freedom of speech, slap acts, because I am a fairly well-known radio personality and newsman, investigative journalist. And the fact that they've tried to murder me twice, that makes me a victim and a witness and informant under the Violent Crime Victims Act.
Absolutely.
Although the federal government, the U.S. attorneys, with their bias conflicts and their accusatory minds, they don't like to give that classification up readily. You've got to forcefully make it yourself. And, of course, then your affidavit of status can be tactical, enhanced, and incorporate ameliorating circumstances to false insinuations such as sovereign citizen or domestic terrorist activities and so on and so forth. Then it becomes an affidavit, becomes unimpeachable, because it's your affidavit, your truth, and your facts, and nobody else can rebut or rebuke or make
statement. Let me ask you this. Are you aware that Congress has given, in Title 18, Congress gave all judges clothed with the power of a magistrate the authority, the jurisdiction, to issue warrants on federal charges? 18-30-41-30-3041. You might want to take a look at that, because what you could do is charge these people, these officers, with some minor state offense like being a public nuisance, being engaged in stalking, and get them into court and then start getting their testimony about where they were on a date and time certain, where you have audio or audiovisual proof. And then, once they testify, turn around to the judge and say, oh, by the way, the United States Congress has given you authority to issue a warrant on under 18 U.S.C. 1503, and I think you need to issue a warrant for these guys on that charge, too. Now, that... You know, that would be coming out of left field. They would not see it coming.
Well, I agree with you, and if we had an honest judge, we might be able to get that on. In some cases, there, you know, this is the thing. The enforcement is so sporadic. I've read cases up in New York and New Jersey and over in San Diego. In San Diego, the case is Puana versus Kialoa. That's Lewis and Catherine Kialoa. Lewis Kialoa was the chief of the police for the Honolulu PD, and Catherine was the assistant deputy attorney general or prosecutor in the same venue where he was the sheriff, which is a violation of separation of powers that puts people in danger of being ramrodded, and that's exactly what they were doing, abusing their governmental powers and discretion, public corruption crimes.
Right.
And they were indicted. You can find it on Honolulu. I think it's Honolulu 4. It might be 13. But there's an ongoing update on the prosecution of these people, and it included six high-level members of his special investigations task force that he was using to do his dirty work and to extort money and steal property and mailboxes and other stuff there. And that Puana was a relative of Catherine Kialoa's and Lewis Kialoa's, that they were stealing his property and stole his mailbox and other deleterious and criminal acts. And they were prosecuted by the U.S. attorney, the assistant U.S. attorney, AUSA, there in San Diego and the Pacific Islands out in the Hawaii area FBI agent, resident agent, also aided in the prosecution of Louis Kealoha and Catherine.
Oh, good. Glad to know they're doing something.
But yeah, but it's so spotty. That's the thing. That if there was a continual, you got this guy down, Brady, whatever his name is, down in, I think it's Alabama, who's constantly arresting perps and policemen and so on and so forth. They're back extorting money, stealing money from the evidence room and from people. He is continually coming up on the Internet. I think his name is either Brady or Grady something. And, you know, if we had more honest, upright public servants that were enforcing the law and holding to people and their own employees to accountability, that would restore the people's faith and trust in the system. Right now, we're at a dangerous low and predicating on violent revolution in this country because of the egregious abuse of governmental authority.
Yep.
Can I jump in there?
Yep, I'll yield.
Well, if you had something, Paul, go ahead.
No, that's all right. I'm through.
All right. Well, Chris, I'm glad you raised, you articulated a focal point that we're up against the prospect of the people have no choice, apparently, in your choice of words there, I think. We're rapidly approaching a point where the people apparently will have no choice except, I think you used the phrase, violent revolution, unquote. And see, the common law of trespass is excellent to study because in the law of trespass, you can come right up to a line and you can do all kinds of singing and dancing and jumping around and pull your pants down and butt cheek people, moon people, and do anything you want if you're on the outside of the trespass line. But if you put your big toe on the other side of that trespass line, guy's got the right to pull out his gun and shoot you. Because that's the dividing line between criminal and non-criminal behavior. See, if you're in public space or your own place, you can do anything you want. That's liberty. But in other people's space, you don't got those rights, and you need to be real careful about what you're doing and where. And to build further on your specific issue about the possibility of violent revolution, see, this is why I'm so adamant about forming our own courts and having our own judicial process. Because, see, the definition of that word violent, it means lawless force. Unlawful force, and see, we the people oppressed, if we've completed due process of law, there is no necessity whatsoever to indulge in violence. See, what we will be doing once we've completed due process of law and secure 12 signatures on a jury-issued arrest warrant, see, at that point, what we're doing is not violence, it's law enforcement, it's lawful enforcement of judicial decisions. So, and if we do that on a massive basis, then there's no need for your apprehension that our people will be driven towards violent revolution. That should not be an option in the vocabulary of any enlightened patriots, because they are pushing us in that way, and that's what they want. Because at that point, if we resort to lawless violence in a revolution, then they have the authority to respond with their jackbooted Nazis, and boom, the war's on. But if we are legitimate Sixth Amendment and Seventh Amendment judicial and executive peace officers, then they can't play that.
May I clarify my position, Charles?
Yes, please, Chris, go ahead. I yield.
Even though I use those words in citing and calling back to JFK that said that those who make peaceful revolution impossible, make violent revolution inevitable. And we also know that in the scriptures it says resistance to tyranny is obedience to God. I'm not promoting violent revolution. I don't think destroying people and property, lives and souls of men and women and children is a wise course of action for any to take. I do think that there are policies of government that are trying to propel and force us to go down that course because it suits their evil, wicked agenda. And so I certainly never suggest violence. I know that war is destruction. I don't advocate war. I advocate peace, peaceful coexistence, and trying to resolve your issues peacefully. But sometimes tyrants and dictators and bullies force you to react and do something to guard, protect, and defend against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to exercise your castle doctrine and stand your ground rights to protect your own private property from people who would steal it from you that have no morals or compunction against doing harm to you to get what they want in their lust for stuff. Thank you.
Yeah, well said, Chris. Well said. Do you comprehend my point, though, about the difference between violence and lawful force and how we need to be organizing our own courts to issue our own judgments, to give our own peace officers color of legitimacy so that we can resort to arms when those jackbooted Nazis are trying to provoke us to violence?
Good night, gentlemen.
Paul, we didn't mean to run you off here.
No, you're not. I've got another call I've got to make.
All right. Love you, Paul. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, and this is David. I'm going to have to get off, too. I just thank you for having me on tonight, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks, huh?
Yeah. I hope to have our conferences running more competently here in the near future, David. I'm sorry. It was all
confused up here.
All travel safe and lock your doors on your houses and your cars because an unlocked door is an invitation to all to enter.
All right, have a good one.
Good night, David.
Good night. Good night, Chris. Good night, Michael, or Mike.
Good night, David.
I think Chris jumped off, too. I don't know if he dropped off accidentally, but it looks like we're down to just Cindy and Michael and myself here.
Well, if I may.
Michael, please, the floor's open.
we as the disenfranchised victims of a national crime called this charade of election we just had, We really have an opportunity that could really become a very powerful weapon to engage our courts. I just don't see that we have enough time right now to try and assemble our own courts. I think we have before us right now a perfect opportunity to utilize this disenfranchisement, this mass disenfranchisement, in a way that never before have we had. And the people are just salivating at some kind of remedy, at some kind of resolution to what happened.
Yeah.
And if we could get a critical mass movement of you know, demanding a grand jury be convened, whether the county level, the state level, or the federal, preferably the federal. But we're seeing, you know, with, I mean, heck, the 9/11 grand jury petition has been sitting there for over a year and a half, I think 2 years now almost. You know, the first one that was made up in the Southern District of New York.
Yeah.
It's still sitting there.
Yeah.
And that was made, that was requested by 3,200 professionals, architects, engineers, with
yeah.
a group of six attorneys.
Yeah, bar member lawyers, yeah, yeah. And you're wondering
yeah,
why it doesn't get any traction, right, Brother Michael?
Well, no, I know why. It's, it has nothing to do with the bar member lawyers.
Well,
it's because it's a very big crime that the biggest players in the world were a part of.
Right, and you don't think the bar member lawyers are a part of that big player group?
Well, there's no doubt about it, but they're not the reason why it's not getting traction. There's lots of grand juries that get in panel, that get convened, and justice gets brought.
Yeah, but this is a bigger issue.
Right, that's why. It's the issue, not the participants.
Well,
it's
only
issue.
Participants that obstruct things like this. You got some participants somewhere that are causing an obstruction, and I dare say you should probably start with those bar member lawyers.
That's because they all are.
Not everybody in that 911 complaint is bar member lawyers.
No, not the complaint, but the in working in the prosecutor's office, the Southern District Court of New York, they are.
Oh yeah,
that's who's holding it back. But it's the issue that is controlling the justice, not the bar member lawyers.
Well, I don't want to pick on your 911 lawyers. I'm failing with a lot of you good people. I like to think I'm pretty good with my words, but I'm failing in communicating the solution that I clearly see. I can clearly see it, but I'm having trouble articulating it clearly so that the rest of you can jump on my bandwagon.
Huh? I really am glad it's just you and I, okay? We have no audience to play up to. We have nothing to be ashamed of, no embarrassing moments, nothing, okay? It's just you and I. And I'm going to be very frank with you, Charles. We don't have time to implement your strategy. Your strategy is a good strategy. It is a winning strategy in the long run. But right now, we are facing tyranny pounding at the door. And unless we get this election exposed as a crime and adjudicated, and the perpetrators imprisoned, hung, executed, whatever, however the justice finds that they may be dealt. That needs to happen first. If we don't have honest elections in this country, then we have nothing but a banana republic, and all the justices of the peace wouldn't amount to a hill of beans. All the self-governing wouldn't amount to a hill of beans, because we would still have tyranny entrenched at the highest, most powerful levels of government. And
well, are you making an argument against forming self-governing communities?
Oh, no. I just told you it's a winning strategy.
It's short-term, short-term. Are you seeing any role short-term for
absolutely not. There is no time to do what you want to do.
Well,
absolutely. And I'm not saying you need to stop what you're doing, by no means.
That
strategy is a winning strategy, and I agree with you.
Long term. It's important short term, right?
Yeah.
I'd like to address that issue when you get an opportunity to yield there.
Yeah, I yield. Go ahead.
Thank you. The big granite block in between us here is whether or not We've got time to organize. And the implied proposition behind your proposition that we don't have the time is that organizing our self-governing communities is going to take a lot of time. Is that correct?
Well, it's going to take a lot of time because of the momentum of the people is not there.
Gary, so can we dissect this issue and divide it down into its essential points so that we are sure that we are not throwing out the baby with the bathwater here?
Absolutely. I love it that way.
Sometimes I'm blessed with words that help illustrate the issue. Thank you. The biggest part is to form an American national common law jury, and I dare suggest all of the people that are concerned about the obvious election fraud that was engineered by the Biden regime, all we need is 12 people willing to put their signatures on paper and adjudicate based upon the evidence what is public knowledge. That's all we need. It can be done within a week if we had a good group like the 911 Commission behind us. That group or the
Charles
group, we could do it quick and efficient. I yield. Go ahead.
Okay. Let's say we get 12 people and we do it. Then what?
That's step number two. We just accomplished 85% of the whole stinking project that you said was going to take years and years and years, and we didn't have time for.
No. The remedy is going to take, using your strategy, the remedy, achieving the remedy will take too long.
Okay. So then you have no objection to us forming juries in a quick and efficient manner, adjudicating it, and accomplish 85% of the whole project, and then we can talk. We can decide whether or not to take the long road of doing our own enforcement, or maybe we can do things like what was talked about with this administrative and arbitration process, and take our jury verdict before the de facto courts, and say, hey, we just completed due process of law, but we don't want to prompt a violent revolution or anything here. So maybe y'all can help us with a little bit of enforcement here.
Okay, Charles,
we can do that.
If I may,
please.
Let's take it step by step. Okay, we got a 12-man person jury. We find that this election was a criminal action perpetrated on the entire nation. Then
yeah.
What do we do?
We need to issue a judgment, partial judgment, or complete final judgment. Either way, probably best to start out with a partial judgment and test the water with something well chosen, not excessively light, but not excessively heavy either. Maybe an arrest warrant, maybe not. But at least adjudicating that Mr. Biden is not. Huh?
If I may. Let's say we do both. Let's say we start with a partial judgment, and then we go with a full-blown judgment. 6 months down the road, 3 months down the road, whatever you think it'll take, we do both. We have determined that the perpetrators of the Democratic Party, President Biden, have participated in election fraud and theft. Then what do? We have judged this to be the case by the evidence that was presented, and then what do?
The jury would be deciding what we would do next.
Right. Well, let's say the jury says that they're guilty of treason. What's the punishment of treason?
It's not statutory. The jury can prescribe whatever punishment they want. They judge the law and the facts.
Okay, the minimum would be immediate arrest, correct?
I would think so, yes.
Yeah, I think that's quite obvious. Then what? The jury says arrest them. Then what do?
Well, the jury would also prescribe what the next step is, maybe throw Biden in jail for a month or two, maybe longer. The jury could decide anything that is in
right,
the interest of justice.
Huh? Most likely they're going to want perpetrators arrested. So who's going to have the power and authority to go and seek the arrest of President Biden? I certainly am not going to do it because I don't want to end up in jail.
Right. Well, see, at that point, we would default back to, like, we just completed some administrative process or some arbitration or commercial process, which brings us to the de facto courts, which
arbitration only
were, huh?
Arbitration is arbitrary.
Right, I don't like it either, but it does have certain powers that once you got some kind of a judgment, you can go to the de facto courts and ask for their assistance in enforcement of your judgment.
They wouldn't even listen to the President of the United States.
Well, then we're all doomed. But I think the more reasonable proposition is that sometimes there is a few judges, especially if you could find a good right-wing Trump supporter judge. There's a few of those out there. Okay?
Okay? Okay, now you're wanting to use the de facto.
No. I'm trying to get past your bottleneck where you don't want to do our own enforcement because you say that that's going to take way too long. So I'm following the only option, which is the de facto.
Charles, that is a probable likelihood. I think I represent a very big portion of most common logical thinking people. They don't want to stick their neck out and commit suicide by trying to arrest the President of the United States.
Okay, well,
that problem you're going to run into, finding a group of people willing to do that, is going to be very difficult, if not...
If we can go step by step instead of you piling step number two and step number three and step number four behind your bold proposition at step number one, if we could get together on what I believe you've conceded here, that there's no problem with us just at least doing 85% of the entire project by doing our own jury verdict, because that doesn't involve any enforcement. If we could get that 85% accomplished, then once we were in that position, then we'd have our jury together. Then it wouldn't just be Charles and Michael talking on the phone. It'd be 12 of us talking, okay? And at that point, we would be talking about whether or not to use the de facto courts, or maybe it would be more quick and efficient to use our town constable peace officers to go ahead and do it. Maybe we've got some gun rights enthusiasts that are afraid of losing their Second Amendment that are chomping at the bit to go ahead and start exercising some Second Amendment law enforcement authority that they're legitimately entitled to. Maybe.
Okay, I'm going to tell you this.
Go ahead.
Okay, I hear what you're saying, but I'm going to tell you this. The moment that you assemble a jury and you have a verdict that Biden was guilty of treason and election fraud and election theft, and the next step that, you know, you're going to do is adjudicate him, you're going to pass a judgment that all these perpetrators need to be arrested. That will eventually come.
No. If the situation is explosive, the jury can take that into account and throttle back accordingly.
Okay, then that's just going to cause more time. Why would they want to throttle back on justice?
Because of your concern of violence erupting and it turning into an all-out war.
Right. Well, that's why we're having this discussion now, to hopefully save a bunch of time and money. We know that would be the eventual result, that the moment we start planning to arrest anyone that's in office for a crime, from our common law determinations of our Supreme Court, immediately they're going to start, you know, planning our arrest and charging us with, you know, a whole lot of crimes, which I don't want to be any part of.
Right. I hear your apprehension.
Right. So what I'm trying to to convey to you is, rather than go through all that exercise of futility, I mean, it's not futile in principle, because we are pursuing justice. We are honorable men pursuing an honorable cause.
Yeah.
I mean, that's undeniable. That's why we're all doing what we do.
Yeah.
But we've got to be logical. We've got to be wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove.
And I think the due process of coming up to the point where we've agreed that the election was fraudulent, that Biden has participated in the fraudulent electoral process. He is not legitimately entitled to the office of the president, and we've got 12 reputable people all agreeing that that is at least part of what our final judgment document is going to be. And at that point, we can put a temporary wrap on it, and we can declare that and publish it and just take a six-month hiatus and just let the dust settle around that, where we're not even talking about enforcement. Huh?
Okay, you just made my point. We don't have 6 months to wait around.
Well, then we can go from a more powerful position of having a common law verdict, jury verdict behind us for whatever the heck we want to do from there on out.
Yeah, we need to petition at the county level, the
state
level.
See, you don't get, you're talking petition. You're going back to square zero when you just accomplished square 85.
No, we have no
petitions. Petitions are vastly inferior to jury verdicts, my friend.
Not when the jury has no enforcement.
Wait, petitions are not for enforcement. You need to start. Petition is poor wording for enforcement. You're not seeking enforcement with a petition.
No, I'm seeking an eventual enforcement with a grand jury being properly impaneled and enforced with the responsibility of investigating the crime.
You're complaining about waste of time with my strategy, and you're going back to square zero with your grand jury and your petition, which is going to consume way, 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 way more time than the common law jury verdict strategy that I'm talking about.
Well, here's the difference. The difference between yours and what I'm proposing is one is recognized within our government of we the people. Not everybody in the government is fraudulent, de facto, and a bar member. Justice is found every day, every week, in courts all across America.
What do you
laugh? I mean, it's true.
I'm going to insist on laughing there, Brother Michael. I think you're a bit behind the curve in that area. I think Chris and a number of others would back me up on this.
What? You're saying no justice is found in courts?
I'm not saying no justice is found in the de facto courts. I'm saying that any justice that is found is allowed as window dressing, as superficial propaganda for serving their interests to pretend.
I think in some cases.
Most 99%. Real issues like 9-1-1 and this election, it'll never get its way through the de facto courts. You're delusional, with all due respect, brother.
No, I'm delusional with using the status quo method. Yeah, but if we can get a critical mass movement, this is my whole point. We have on a silver platter a window of opportunity. Never before has there been such angst and turmoil and anger at government. Probably the last time there has ever been such anger and angst of government was 1775-76.
We agree on that. You're preaching to the choir on that issue, sir.
Okay, then why don't you see the logic?
It's because you're jumping around issues. Just because we agree on the problem, you disagree. Your point of contention with me is not about the nature of the problem we face. The point of contention between us that we should be talking about is how to engineer the most quick and efficient and socially responsible solution.
Yeah, I'm advising that we organize a team within the existing government that we have.
Yeah. See. That's where we company.
What? You don't think anything works anymore? So is the baby dead in the bathwater?
No, the baby is not in the bathwater. The baby's out in the crib.
Asked you, is it dead?
The cause of liberty and justice is not dead.
The cause isn't.
Right.
Is the remedy dead?
Huh?
Is the remedy dead? Are you telling me there's no justice in our courts? There's no justice
in the civil municipal Roman Empire model courts.
So you don't think a jury of our peers, properly convened and given the evidence, you know, they're the judge of the law.
You're talking about a jury that's been randomly selected from the population by the
yes.
civil municipal process, right?
Yes.
See, 85% of those people...
Charles, I'm talking about the same kind of jury that overthrew the Tammany Hall conspiracy tyrannist.
Well, I don't know that particular jury selection process, and that does seem to be a unique assembly of people that was particularly courageous, and it was beautiful.
Have you read the two essays on my website?
No, I start puking every time I start going through too much of it.
Why? What do you puke about?
Because it's all trash, it's way behind the curve in comprehending how real due process of law works.
I don't know how. This has been used for over 150 years to get justice and overthrow tyranny.
Yeah, and that's why we're in such a beautiful situation right now, right?
No, it's because people got lazy.
It's all the common people's fault. There's no big conspiracy at the top, right?
What?
It's all the common people's fault. There's no big conspiracy at the top.
Well, it's both. It's common.
I dare suggest we need to quit blaming the common people at the grassroots. That's not part of the equation. The problem is the evil conspiracy at the top, 100%.
No, I wouldn't say 100% at the top.
Yeah, 100% at the top. Everybody at the lower levels, they're part of the conspiracy at the top if they're not a patriot.
Yeah, and by their inaction, they've become part of the problem.
No, obstruction. We've got obstructionists. That's the problem. Inaction is not our problem. If everybody was doing inaction, we'd have peace. There would be no breach of the peace because...
No, the inaction has resulted because of the obstruction. The long-term use of obstruction has disenfranchised the people to the degree that they have no faith or hope in the system. So they don't.
Obstruction is a breach of the peace. Obstruction is a breach of peace. Huh?
They don't even want to get involved.
You're talking about the problems with the common people.
They know how bad and deep the corruption is.
Right.
But if this election could be put before a grand jury of our peers to be investigated.
Afraid to cap people like what you're talking about, right?
What?
Afraidy cat people like what you're talking about?
No. Given the opportunity to let justice reign through their decision, they would gladly participate.
I think you're
Most people have no understanding. Most people have no understanding how a grand jury is supposed to be used to investigate criminal government corruption. This was the whole purpose of the grand jury, was to provide a sword and a shield against government.
Well, I dare suggest you're not well studied in biblical Torah law. There was no grand juries in biblical Torah law.
Well, we have it now because we've got evil government. Evil men have conspired to create evil government. And the founders gave us this weapon to protect ourselves. Why don't you want to use this?
Because it's not biblical. It's not Christian. It's common law.
Yes, it is common law.
No, which one of us is the greater common law expert here?
Charles, I don't know where you get off on saying a grand jury is not common law. Man, you need to read those two essays.
I don't. I've already comprehended. Those essays are not contemplating what happened at the Norman conquest of England in 1066 when everything got adulterated from the peer system of common law.
You're way off base, man. I guess we have no more common ground then. If you don't think the grand jury institution is common law,
what's the world, man?
Come on.
Well, look, Brother Michael, I know your heart's in a good place, and I'm optimistic that I'm going to be able to find the words and put together a package that will spark your enthusiasm at some point in the future when and maybe I'll have to convince other people to jump on my bandwagon before you decide to, but I do believe that I'm capable of engineering something that is going to produce the profound positive changes that you're saying that you do seek, and I believe you.
Charles, we don't have time.
You're not the final judge. I say that your process is consuming and wasting way more time than my process. We're going to have to agree to disagree on that if we're going to remain friends here, brother.
Now, you don't even want to read the two essays.
I've spent 30, 40 years studying this crap, Michael. I can recognize bullshit propaganda when I see it, and I don't need to study it.
Good night, Charles. You're so deceived, man. Good night.
Okay. I love you, Michael. Good night.
I don't want to hang up either.
Huh?
Yeah, well, you don't want to listen.
One of us is being an asshole here, brother.
Yeah, it's you.
How about we bring in a few others like a jury trial is supposed to do and to try to figure out what's going on here?
Yeah, when a man tells me he doesn't even want to read the evidence I have to offer.
I can give you big old reading assignments, too. You haven't read about the Norman conquest. Why don't you go you haven't. If you did, you wouldn't be doing the stupid arguments about grand juries.
Totally disagree. I tell you what, man. I don't know what to tell you, Charles.
If you're up to the hardball a little bit longer here, I could attack it from a little bit different angle.
No, you don't even want to read a couple scholarly essays.
But you don't want to read. You don't want to read
common law.
See, we
don't want to hear about American common law. So screw you.
Ooh. Hey, Cindy. Just you and me. Michael said he wasn't going to hang up, but he did hang up. See, Michael gets a little bit hot. That's where the problem with Lewis came in. That's Michael's a little bit of a hothead. Love him like a brother. I know his heart's in a good place. But he's a little bit of a hothead. He said he didn't want to hang up, and then he hung up. That's okay. One of us don't want to read the material. He wants to give me reading assignments, but he don't want to do the reading assignments that I give him. Love you, Michael. Okay. I'll try to engineer a more competent conference here in the future. I'm sorry for the technical difficulties. Yeah. Okay. This is the 5th of April, 2021. I am Charles Stewart in Coleman, Texas, and this is the end of our right-wing conference here. Good night, all.